Hello, friends. Welcome once again to the Perfect Bound Podcast. This is a podcast all about anything and everything comic books and comics related, brought to you by the Panel Jumper and Comics Dungeon. This is episode number 42. My name is Ben. With me, as always, is Mr. Chris Casso.
Hello.
Nicole Lamb.
Hello.
And Cole Hornaday.
Hi.
Who, I thought you were going to spit water all over the table. What's going on over
well,
there?
Well, Nicole said something funny before you started rolling, and in her typically cute way, and it just struck my overly inflamed funny bone, and I started getting
the
giggles.
Should get that looked at.
Yeah. All
right. You know, an overinflamed funny bone can lead to so many more things. It's, oh man, see your doctor. All right, well, welcome back, everybody. You probably don't know this because we've been putting out content every week, but we've taken a little hiatus for about a month now, maybe a month and a half.
We don't know. We did a marathon. We talked so much.
I know. We were all done by the time that was over.
I think I quit talking for a whole 20 minutes when we were done.
Anyway, so we're going to start the show off with a very rare segment we do called Shameless Self-Promotion. I think we've only done it once before. So Cole and I both opened different shows this past week. And so normally we record these podcasts on Wednesdays, but we had rehearsals on Wednesdays. So, Cole, tell the audience here, what show were you doing?
Well, I was actually involved in a theatrical production that is by geeks, for geeks, and verily, at a certain level, about geeks. It's the Rogues Gallery's production of Shoggoths on the Veldt. It's a double-fisted adventure story. It's an H.P. Lovecraft theme adventure comedy, a Cthulhu adventure comedy, written by a gentleman named Cameron McNary, and directed by Daniel Wood. And I play two parts. It's kind of a high adventure kind of thing. Cthulhu never appears in it, but a lot of the other elder gods do. The first time I read the script, I laughed out loud all the way through, which is a good sign. It's playing now until December 6th at the Inscape Arts facility at 815 Seattle Boulevard South in Seattle. You can look up the website, Rogues Gallery. It's the roguesgallery.tv, or you can find us on Facebook.
And I'll put a link to all of this in the show notes.
Okay, marvelous. One of the reasons I was excited about doing this play is that it's about, it's a female-fronted story. It's a famed Victorian explorer, Melford Pumbleshear's fiance, Euphonia Rigstone, goes to find the secret of this ancient temple, and she runs into a villainess on the way. The male characters are secondary, and that's one of the things that excited me about Cameron's play is that you know, it's really about these two female characters duking it out.
Admit it, you just didn't want to be on stage that long. I have to memorize all those lines.
I have plenty of lines, brother. Trust me. I'm having a marvelous time with the show, and audiences are clearly enjoying it. So please, if you have the time, get out and see it, because theater is not forever.
It is very ethereal. And fortunately, when Cole was doing that and he had to bow out for a couple of weeks, I also was doing a show. The show I was in was Sergeant Rigsby and His Amazing Silhouettes presents The Ballad of Carla Fox, co-presented by Printer's Devil Theater and Theater Off Jackson. And by the time this episode goes live, I will have closed that show. So you missed it. I'm sorry, friends. But if you were my friends, you'd already have come seen it. Cole saw it.
I did. It's marvelous. Scott Augustin is
a national treasure,
and a mad genius. And he writes these sweetly bizarre parables. They're these wonderful.
Why not?
Yeah. Okay. And Ben has been a long-suffering puppeteer. They're all shadow puppet shows and done in the style of like 1940s old-time radio theater.
Exactly. We have four voice actors on stage who do all most of the sound effects by themselves. Certainly a cast of thousands with just the four people. And I sometimes forget that we only have four actors out there when I'm behind the stage. This really elaborate screen.
It's true.
Manipulating about 160 shadow puppets. So you know, it's one
know.
Of those things.
I don't know how he keeps track.
I'm not
stuff.
Alone. It's like, so Scott is behind the screen with me. more to the point, I'm behind the screen with Scott because he's sort of the ringleader. But anyway, so I tell the voice actors, how do you do all those voices? And they say to us, how many hands do you really have? So anyway, that was the show. But to make it to open this up to everybody, is there any shameless self-promotion that you, Chris, or you, Nicole, want to mention?
Go ahead, Nicole.
Well, it's not self-promotion, but we are doing monthly ladies' nights.
Awesome.
And there is going to be one coming up on December 12th. I'll probably mention that in the next podcast as well.
Excellent.
And I'm also looking to start a ladies'
book club. I'm sorry, Nicole.
What
is ladies' night? What do y'all do?
It's mostly like a meet and greet. It's very casual. Uh-huh. We have a sale, and we always have a theme. So December will be diversity in comics. We'll also have Tatiana Gill, who is... a local woman who has created drawings of plus size characters and having a body positive drawing. So we'll have some of that represented. We'll have people of color represented, queerity represented, that kind of thing. And there's 20% off all of those comics.
Cool. So now, traditionally, in a ladies' night at a bar, the ladies get a discount on their drinks.
Exactly. So
do the ladies get a discount on the comic books? Does the 20% only apply to ladies?
On the material that counts for that evening. So the last one we had was female superheroes and villains. Mm-hmm. So if you bought anything within that range, be you man or woman or anything, you got the discount.
All
so
right.
It's on the theme itself.
Gotcha.
And it doesn't matter what gender you are necessarily.
Gotcha.
You're
yes.
buying it.
Yes.
Excellent.
Yeah. But we're also looking to start a ladies' book club. So that I know this is going to draw probably at the end of the month, but still, if you're interested, you should email me at nicole@comicsdungeon.com.
Excellent. Mm-hmm. And we'll talk more about Ladies' Night next week.
Exactly.
Excellent. Awesome.
Even more.
Mm-hmm. All right. Chris, do you have anything, or was that, do you want to piggyback onto that one?
We do have a, it was supposed to arrive this week, but we're missing them. So it'll probably arrive by the time that this goes up. But Valiant has released a new title called Wrath of the Eternal Warrior. And we have a shared exclusive cover with a couple other comic book stores. And so we should have a good chunk of those arriving within the next week or two. UPS lost it and our distributor lost it and everybody lost it. So magically it will arrive from Philly soon.
But another comic book store found it.
Yes. All right. Maybe
Yay.
They're the ones who took it.
No, they were really great.
Yeah.
All right.
And so that will be in soon. And then I can actually read a copy and tell you if it's good.
Yay.
I think it will be.
How do you have the time to read all these comics?
I don't.
The man just doesn't sleep. All right. Well, that's shameless self-promotion, and that's our show. But before we go,
we have many miles to go before we sleep.
All right. Okay. So the first thing we want to talk about this week is the news that unexpected but not surprising.
Uh-huh.
Gem the Holograms got pulled after only 2 weeks in the theater. Now, that's what happens with, like, really bad Broadway plays. Now, I don't think if any... Nicole, did you happen to go see this movie? I know you're a big Gem and the Holograms fan.
Oh, no.
No, because really? It's not a Gem and the Holograms movie.
See, that's what I heard. It's Gem and the Holograms in name only.
Yeah, it's a Hollywood changes who you are movie. That's all it is.
That's the plot, or that's...
That's the whole thing.
The
yeah, it's a girl and like, it's me and my girlfriends and we make music, yeah! And then it's like, Hollywood's all like, we like you, Jem. You should just be Jem and do your own thing and get rid of those other guys. And it's just like, okay.
I saw some clips of this, and what's funny is that whole part about, like, the Hollywood people getting her.
Yeah.
Like, they uploaded their music video and they got something like 25,000 hits. And it's just like, that's good. Don't get me wrong.
I
you're
know,
doing good.
Like,
but
good.
Like Markiplier gets 3 million hits. So it's just like, so what corporate evil soulless machine would be like, let's just grab this random thing that got two people viewing it.
And I think
and
even
exploit
in the comics, they actually got like a million hits or something like that. So even the comics are doing it better than the movie can't even read a comic,
know.
Hollywood.
Yeah, seriously. And there's no misfits.
There's no misfits. There's no synergy.
Right.
The whole reason why she's Gem is because there's a computer that turns her into Gem, and she's got earrings that she goes, "Showtime synergy," and then she's Gem.
So it sounds like they focus grouped all the heart out of what the story originally was.
Well, yeah, it sounds like they're doing that thing where they're not actually paying attention to the source material. Mm-hmm. Material. They're trying to make a film that would appeal to the kids of today. And
but they don't understand the kids. Yeah.
And not even paying attention to the people who might, who grew up with Jim. Now, I have the same fear for the announced Masters of the Universe movie, and I want them to make a good Masters of the Universe movie that I'm going to enjoy because that's my childhood hero. But nah, it's probably going to be some garbage that they're trying to,
but
you know, focus
not.
Group for 13-year-olds.
Maybe not.
Well, like I said, I have high hopes.
See, like, maybe this movie, Jim, would have been great if it was like Kids Incorporated circa 1993 or something on the Disney Channel. Like, I don't know. Like, maybe it would have been good because they've already done that story.
Mm-hmm.
Like, a lot.
Yeah, it's Sabrina, or not Sabrina, it's Josie and the Pussycats.
Yeah,
and the
Muppet
story.
Yeah. At least that had, like, charm to it.
At least
you know?
Had Miss Piggy that time around.
Yeah. I'll probably
we just
want to
make people happy.
Just to know.
Right, right.
But
well, you're not going to be able to see it in the theaters anymore. You'll have to.
That's great. Because I'm not spending $30 on it.
Get it in the quarter bin.
It's on Netflix yesterday.
Yeah, great.
Retro.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. So that's Jim and the Holograms. More news came out that. So. DC has been apparently trying to sell The Dark Knight 3 by saying Frank Miller's writing it.
Right.
And it recently came out that Frank Miller's not actually writing The Dark Knight 3.
Not at all. Yeah.
Is there any credence to the rumor that he is dying of cancer?
I have not heard that, but I think mostly it's because whenever you see a picture of him, he looks like he's already dead.
Yeah.
He looks like Skeletor without
long,
like,
he looks awful, but I mean that rumor is perpetuated and it's no great leap to go, well, you know, maybe somebody's looking out for him in the DC castle and they're, you know, trying to funnel money his way to keep. I don't know. I made up that story, but I'm sure I'm not alone.
That would be really sweet of DC, and I don't feel like there's a lot of sweethearts at that
company. But his name, at the same time, his name holds. His name.
Yeah.
His name holds.
That's why they put
there
it on
there.
There
are money signs next to his name.
Yeah. That's
right?
why they put it on this
yeah.
one.
Yeah. I mean, why else? Anyway, keep going.
Oh, yeah.
Sorry. You totally called that, Chris, because you had speculated that it was just like. Pretty much named.
Yeah, most that he wrote something on a napkin and handed it to them.
Yeah.
Sure, like a lot of those kind of properties are.
Right.
Yeah. So yeah, it came out that he's not writing Dark Knight 3, but he is writing Dark Knight 4.
Well, right. So what I would, now I'm going to do another future foretelling here, and I bet you that he thinks he will, and then he'll submit the script, and somebody at DC will be like, oh, no, we can't do that, no.
No.
Because that's what happened with The Holy Terror, and they're like, oh, that's more racist than we're comfortable with, and we are Time Warner, so we actually can some give and flow with that one there.
And actually, though, we are a publisher of questionable taste a lot of the time. This is stepping over our boundaries.
Yeah.
I like that. So Newsarama broke this story, but Chris, you linked it to us from a website, theouthousers.com. And I love they have a sidebar poll. How many days since DC did something stupid?
Yeah.
And it seems like every time you forward an article from them, the last line is time to reset the counter.
Yeah. Yeah.
Those... Are we talking about Supergirl this time or next time?
Well, see, that's I was just going to bring that up.
Later. Yeah. Yeah, that's later.
Speaking of DC. we can jump to that. They're shocked that there might be a demand for a Supergirl comic after the successful launch of the CBS show.
Yeah,
when like the trailer made people cry out of happiness. Yeah, there would be no demand
for this thing.
They're rushing reprint trades to the press.
Pretty much some of them, yeah. They just offered us like a bundle of like, here's all the things we have in stock, you know, here's an extra discount. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, that's okay. I mean, I have a bunch of it and
that we didn't sell last time.
The problem is like they have the new 52 Supergirl trade. It's just like, I guess I could sell those. But like it would make so much sense if they just had a brand new series that launched like last month. Mm-hmm. Like here's a number one for everybody.
Mm-hmm. Being said, tell me how does the Green Arrow book do in conjunction with the Arrow TV series, and how does the Flash comic do, you know, in relation to the TV series?
I sell a couple more trades of the first volumes as I would. Also, they also have an Arrow comic that's based specifically on the cut show, and a Flash series that just started, and they're like season 0 or season 2.3 or something.
And how well do those sell?
They do well. They do well at conventions. The single issues, not so fast for us, but they do okay. But the trades are handy to have around.
Yeah.
So it's like it makes sense to have something.
So there's a precedent for marketing this way.
Oh, yeah.
TV series, let's have some comic books on the stand that relate to it directly.
It's only a good business to do that.
Oh, yeah. And why do you suppose that the knuckleheads in power decided not to do that?
Girls don't like comic book things.
Yeah. Girls don't go to comic
book
stores.
That's probably number one.
Guys don't read comic books about girls.
No.
Yeah,
gosh, no.
I think they're underestimating their fan base. I think that's just kind of where they're at. Whether it's girls or guys or whatever.
Which is a mental ailment they have suffered from for quite some
time. Maybe they didn't expect the TV show to do so well.
Well, no, that's possible.
You could also say, too, that with the move the Burbank, even though that's now a little bit in the past, that they still have to restructure some of these smaller aspects of connecting the publishing decisions to the larger decisions that are happening. So maybe this just it fell on the wayside, you know, but even then it's just like, you guys should still have, somebody in the back should have been, hey, one, how about we do a one shot? Or something, you know.
We might could maybe make some money.
Yeah, because I mean, like Marvel's got
those moving vans.
Yeah, Marvel's got like the Shield comic because of Agents of Atlas. Right. They're just launching another one called Agents of Atlas. So you have two Shield or Agents of Shield. Sorry,
I got it.
And
we knew what you meant.
Yeah, you know.
I didn't. Thanks for clarifying that.
And
but
there,
I thought that was Agents of Shield, but all right, Agents of Atlas. Whatever.
All you need to know is one of them has a gorilla in it.
Yep.
Yes.
Anyway, sorry, I'm going to derail your train.
No, that's
you
fine.
You just let me, don't let me do that.
It's all good.
Ben was going back like, did I see a gorilla man in
was
Shield?
There a gorilla?
Yeah. Sooner or later,
I missed
will
an
be.
Episode, yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it's just like, it makes sense to get something just cross-market.
Yeah.
Yeah, why not? So yeah.
Speaking of cross-pollination... Which is a weird segue to say.
I like it. Anytime you can use the phrase cross-pollination, I'm happy.
Apparently the Wasp is going to return to Marvel Comics in all new, all different Wolverine.
Except Wasps aren't pollinators.
Now, is all new, all different Wolverine the name of the title, or is that just this guy's clever way of talking about the comic?
No, that's
the name of the title?
Yeah, because Marvel just did their new relaunch. And there's at least five or six titles called the All New, All Different.
Really, guys? It's different this time. Why another number one?
Yeah. Well, tell them what that harkens back to. Tell them why that phrase is significant.
All New, All Different?
Uh-huh.
I'm not sure which... What do you want me to say on that? I'm not sure.
When the Uncanny X-Men broke doors in the 70s, that's what they called the book, was the All New, All Different Uncanny X-Men.
Marvel keeps recycling these adjectives, and it means nothing to me anymore.
That was the precedent, and I thought that you knew your history, Chris. And
I don't think I care. Especially when it comes to X-Men, I'm retroactively learning to not care.
No, that's unfortunate, because I think, actually, X-Men made us who we are today, so... Mm.
Okay. So we've been coming off of Marvel Now, then all new Marvel Now, and now it's all new, all different Marvel.
But we go by the short prefix of that, so Anad.
Anad.
That's what that means.
Yes, you've been seeing it?
I've been seeing that.
Anad.
Like, what is Anad?
Yeah, okay.
Or an ad.
It depends where you emphasize it. Yeah.
I'm getting visions of like...
Yeah, well,
veterinary office.
But anyway, back to the all new, all Wolverine, all different.
Yes.
So, what was it about her?
The Wasp is returning to Marvel one of those topics.
I guess
titles.
That's like in a couple issues or something. Hasn't happened yet. Because number one for all new, all different Wolverine just arrived and we sold out. But I didn't order a huge amount, which I probably should have.
Is this the female X-23 Wolverine?
So,
the clone
somebody
daughter?
Cloned Wolverine and. She's now wearing his costume because a version of Wolverine is dead somewhere, and she's going to carry on his legacy.
Alrighty.
Yes.
So I'm wondering if Wasp, is this like our Wasp, or is this a new Wasp?
It's not Janet Van Dyne Pym.
It's a different.
I saw a blurb, and they referred to her by a different name.
Okay, so maybe they're going off of like,
Hope? Did they call her Hope? Or is that the name of the one in the Ant-Man movie?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, I was wondering if
maybe they're going to merge her in.
With that a little bit, maybe.
Yeah. I was wondering if this had anything to do with the Wasp being a major player in
probably.
Undoubtedly.
Yeah, because I haven't seen her for... I haven't seen Janet in a while.
Because unlike DC, Marvel is attentive.
Very attentive.
Chris, that's something to say.
Corporate Disney is a more effective evil than Time Warner.
Evil, how so? Because they know how to get our precious pennies?
Exactly.
Well, then.
They cross-pollinate.
Speaking of Disney, the new Force Awakens trailer has come out. And
is that the Japanese one?
The one that apparently like had new footage, and I watched it, and I'm like, there may have been like a second or two.
There were
of new
tons
footage.
Of new things in it. Oh my gosh,
maybe
the story has expanded by volumes.
All right.
See, I'm somebody who doesn't watch any more things. Like, I just want to see the movie. So I'm, you know, everyone's like, seen the new trailer, and I'm just like.
And everybody's got their theory on who Kylo Ren is, and I actually
who Rey is and who Finn is, all these kids relate to the original generation.
Buy into the popular theory that who Kylo Ren is. Yeah, have you heard?
I've not heard that one.
I'm not going to spoil anything.
No, what's the theory?
Lucas turned and
No, Kylo Ren is a teen. He's one of the young bucks like Finn and I'm pretty sure. Didn't we see an image of him without his mask in the Vanity Fair?
I've seen a couple of pictures. I didn't know if they were Photoshops or not. So
I thought we saw him without his mask.
He looks kind of gothy.
Yeah, long hair, looked very Harry Potterish. The one thing that does concern me is that supposedly there was a leak information FUBU on Amazon in Asia where there's a puzzle of Finn and it gives his backstory and it actually mentions that he is the son of Lando Calrissian. Uh-huh. Now, if that's the case, that is exceptionally disappointing because they're telling us the scope of culture in this universe is pretty narrow.
One black son.
Exactly.
You're welcome.
Right. And that's very disappointing to me if that's the case.
I would bet it's not because it seems like there's too much of a time difference in the age there. He's a young guy, and Lando would be super.
But Rey is undoubtedly Han Solo and Leia's daughter. I'm sorry. Oh, yeah.
I would almost guess granddaughter.
If she's not Leia's daughter, no. If she's not Leia and Han's daughter, she's Luke's daughter. Luke and Mara Jade.
Luke and Mara, yeah.
Well, but Mara's not continuity anymore, is she?
Right.
Yeah. Anyway.
How does someone get strict from continuity?
Oh, you missed all this.
They cleaned house
like a year ago.
The Disney corporate fairies roll around,
I just think this must have been the best job for a geek because they went through all of the literature, all of it, and determined that which would be canon and that which would not. So, yeah.
Wow. How do you apply to get that job?
I know, right? Like in heaven.
All right. And speaking of trailers, another Jessica Jones trailer came out from Netflix, which is going to come on Netflix sometime soon. And the
20th.
Only.
Yeah, it's going to be out before this rolls out.
Cool. Oh, yeah. 10 days before. And the only feedback I heard from this trailer is needs more David Tennant.
Well, there are going to be people that feel that way. And. They're just going to have to learn how to cope because it's not his story.
I know. A lot of people are going to be disappointed.
But I do like the look of him in the role.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, he's just a terrific actor. He's not going to disappoint. Mm-hmm. And the Purple Man is just heinous.
And creepy.
Heinous character.
Yeah, it has a chance to be slightly darker than Daredevil.
Yeah, I've heard that with the trailers rolling out, and people comment
more psychological,
more psychological.
Yeah, yeah. Definitely. Well, like with the Purple Man, isn't that a whole thing? Because he did
take over people.
He gets into your head.
And
he does bad things.
He destroyed it all.
Like this latest trailer, every other shot was Jessica Jones throwing back some bourbon, and
there's gonna be a lot of drinking.
I'm gonna have to buy a bottle of bourbon to watch the show because when I
take a shot when she takes a shot.
Well, no, because then I would die and last. But like, I don't know how many of you watched the old HBO show Deadwood, but they drink whiskey in that show all the time, and I had such a thirst for whiskey. So that's a dark time. That's news, and let's move on to book report, everybody. Cole Hornaday, what did you read this week? In quotes, because we've been off for like a month and
actually,
a half.
I have an interesting treat. Several weeks ago, I'll try to keep this short, but you know how difficult that is for me. Chris forwarded to me an email promoting a book called Octobriana, The Underground History. Now, if you've had the great good fortune of seeing the second episode of The Panel Jumper, you are familiar with Octobriana from our episode titled The Iron Curtain Maiden. And this gentleman named...
the best title we've ever come up with.
This gentleman named John A. Short, and he has his own publishing organization called Cult Creations, Cult with a K, took it upon himself to do an in-depth study of the character. And Chris forwarded the notice to me because, unfortunately, Mr. Short has not been able to get a distributor in the States to pick up the book. So he's been doing all the legwork to try and get local, to try and get comic book stores at a local level to try to pick them up. I finally got around to reading it after Mr. Short sent me a complimentary copy, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. In fact, it's a quick read. It's a thorough read. I was incredibly gratified to discover that, you know, we got all the highlights, but there are even finer details that he goes into.
Do we get anything wrong?
No, you know, but you remember, you and I went back and forth about what we had to leave out and what was going to stay,
be
pertinent
a
to
lot
the story.
Got left
that happens me. A lot. That just happens in our process of telling the stories anyway. No, there were things that I just never knew anything about.
Okay.
There was, for example, there was a West German publication of the comic. In case you're not already familiar with Octobriana, she is a Cold War Russian superhero that turned out to be a hoax.
Stop the podcast right now. Go watch Curtain Maiden.
That's right.
And then turn us back on.
I found her story to be fascinating, and that's why it was our second episode. Anyway, where was I? I think this is a terrific book, it goes into grander detail than we ever could with the story because you know, we were trying to keep it under 10 minutes or however long it was.
I think we failed.
What I am gratified is where Mr. Short and I agreed on a lot of our storytelling, or rather Ben, Mr. Short and I agreed on a lot of storytelling, and that is that he also resonates with the notion that this character is essentially public domain and she's an open source opportunity for creators to take her and run with it.
Which is how he's able to write a self-published book about her.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Right. And but she also has this rich and varied history, some of it fake, some of it unique, some of it real. And also, I gotta say, one of the best parts about the book is you flip to the back, to the appendix, and there is an entire page devoted to the episode of The Panel Jumper and a picture of me, of yours truly.
Yeah, yeah. Cole smiling face from the store video we did for the Comic Dungeon.
You know, and he, to his credit, Mr. Short goes, he gives every, he covers the production credits verbatim. Everybody's name is here. Everybody's spelled right. He encourages you to go watch the episode. He's even got our title card printed in there as well. Please go to the Cult Creations website, order yourself a copy, explore this character, and consider her potential for yourself as a creative person. I cannot encourage people enough to try to take this character and make her their own and do unique and cool things.
And since she's public domain, that'd be pretty easy.
Yeah, and that's what I wanted to say with the episode, and that's what he's saying with the book. And Chris, you're pointing your finger at me.
Quick question. I noticed you're flipping. I see some Brian Talbot pages. Are those new, or are they just showing
the
old
stuff?
No,
those are from the old Luther Arkwright stories.
Cool. Which is good stuff.
Yeah, which is tremendously good stuff. So, yeah.
Cool. All right. Octobriana, The Underground History by John A. Short. Mm-hmm. Nicole, what did you read this week?
I was catching up on Rat Queens and Volume 2. And I haven't quite finished it yet. There's a bookmark. It's like the last issue. But the Rat Queen series, I'm always kind of like off and on with. It was originally written by Curtis Wiebe, and Rock Upchurch did the artwork. There was a scandalous situation where Rock Upchurch got busted for domestic violence, and Curtis Wiebe decided to take him off and to get other artists on. So in the second volume, it goes over to Stefan Sijic,
maybe,
who did the Sunstone series that I really like. So the art kind of jumps around. It's still kind of jumping around, too, I think.
I think Tess Fowler will take over.
Yeah. So people have gone crazy. Like, the Valkyries that I've talked about have loved this. They've gotten tattoos of Rat Queens and stuff. And I didn't quite get the appeal. Like, I thought it was kind of interesting and funny. It's like D&D girls who like fighting and drinking and boinking. Can I say that?
Sure. Yes. Copulating
by the podcast FCC.
So, you know, they're kind of, they kind of have these like sort of almost masculine tendencies to them in that regard, but it's got a lot of humor to it. And, I thought it was like, it was pretty silly in a way, but, I didn't feel like the depth of characters in the first volume was really great, really strong. In the second one, they actually go back and they tell like the, so there's a dwarf who's like a hipster dwarf. There's a sorceress who's kind of rockabilly style. There's the human healer girl, who I don't really know what her style is, but she's got a skull necklace. And then there's the halfling, or the, I think she's a smidgen in this one. And she likes candy and drugs and girls. So that's kind of like their shticks. And they're eventually fighting like Cthulhu monsters in the second volume. And, there are fun things like the Daves that show up that
I love
Chris,
the four
like,
Daves.
The four Daves. And there's this guy who has like, he's like bluebird beard, or I forget his name. He's,
he's a Dave, but he's got bluebirds in his beard.
And he does, they're like healing bluebirds and stuff. And the dwarf girl likes him and stuff. But anyway, the second volume goes into more of their history. It makes me have a more appreciation for the characters. There's more depth to it, and there's still a lot of humor, and it's still really fun. So I think this is actually even stronger than the first one.
Cool.
And I would recommend Rat Queens, but it's never on like my top picks. It's kind of like, well, if you've tried these other titles and you're looking for something else, try Rat Queens. And I'm actually a big fan of Curtis Wiebe, but he can be hit or miss for me too. Like the Peter Panzerfaust series would just completely fall flat, while Green Wake is one of my like top picks. So that's about all I have to say about that, I think.
All right. Rat Queens, volume two. Not volume one, volume two.
Well, you know, both of them. The first volume's $10, second volume's $15, so it's worth just grabbing them both.
All right.
Yeah.
Cool. Chris, what about you?
I've been backtracking to some older things because I wasn't in the mood to be reading some newer things because I read too many new things. And also because I like to be difficult, I like to recommend things you can't find. So I reread Captain Gravity and the Power of the Vril. It's a lot of fun. It's by, let's see here, first names on some of these guys. Written by Joshua Desart and pencils by Sal Velluto. Sal Velluto did a lot of Black Panther during the Christopher Priest era. And it's very pulpish. It's very The Rocketeer in style. Captain Gravity is a young black man whose name is Joshua Jones, who left the South because of violence and prejudice and started fresh in Hollywood, California. And he met a director who was making these kind of pulpy films of Captain Gravity. And the thing is, the kid Joshua at some point gets exposed to a special element, element 115, that allows him to manipulate gravity. And so he becomes Captain Gravity. So there's, in the context of the story, there are these films of this pulp hero, Captain Gravity, but he takes the costume from set and goes out and does real things as Captain Gravity, which includes fighting Nazis. It's very much just a lot of pulp fun and very well-paced, very well written. It's interesting because they insert little beats that are unusual. Like there's a part where he was trying to go across, let's see here, sorry, one moment, a border on the Eastern Galicia Ukrainian ethnic territory. And like some people are like, you're here to save us, right? And he's like, no, I'm going to Berlin to save the world. And basically that's it. You never get to see him come back and like help those people because he didn't. So there's a lot of these beats, like it's a real world scenario in many places. You can't save everyone. There's a part where there's a pilot that saves him from some Nazi fighters, and the pilot dies and he can't save the guy. And so it changes the tone a little bit, but it's really, really engaging. So it was published by Penny Farthing Press. Maybe you could find it on Amazon.
But it's
a lot
not,
of fun.
It's not readily available at your local comic book store?
No, I could not reorder it. I did try to double check because we are going to have a ladies' night event that focuses on diversity. And I would have loved to have had this in here because having a African-American pulp figure would be a great thing to push.
Yeah.
But I do recommend you could maybe find it online and sample some stuff there. Cool. So, yeah.
Captain Gravity and the Power of the Vril.
Vril.
Cool. All right. Well, that's Book Report, and that's our show. But before we go, of course, we play quiz time. Get your quiz hats on, everybody. This week, our quiz questions come to us from Nicole. Lay it on us, Nicole.
So this is Ladies of This Podcast. That's the question.
Okay. Ladies of this podcast.
It's one of each of the ladies that we talked about.
Oh, all right. Yeah. Cool.
So it's going to just jump around all over the place. So number one is a Jem question. What is Jem's secret identity?
I just read some of those.
Do you want me to multiple choice it?
Yeah.
Like what's her actual
like
name?
Like what's her name? Yeah. Ah. Who was she before she was Jem?
Yeah, give us a multiple choice.
Okay. I'll just go with first names and keep it simple.
Sounds good.
A, is it Bianca? B, is it Jerrica?
Yes.
You just needed to hear it.
I just needed it.
Kind of thought that would happen.
Yes.
All right.
See, that's why.
There you go.
I was going to try to do all Jem, and then I was just like, no, nobody's going to answer any of these. Okay. Second one is a Jessica Jones question.
Awesome.
Who is Jessica Jones's arch nemesis? This should be really easy. Cool.
Kilgrave, the purple man.
Oh, yes, Kilgrave.
You made it too fancy.
That's always in the comic book. That's the way I always pictured him talking.
Well, it's okay. Zebediah Kilgrave, but you went with Kilgrave, like his last name.
That's what he. Isn't that what he used to go by?
Yeah.
No,
all right,
no.
You get the point, Cole.
Totally right, and 0.5 for doing a very fancy,
fancy
voice. All right, so this one is a Wasp question. So a little back story here. In the Tales to Astonish series, the comic series, it was a sci-fi anthology featuring the first appearance of Hank Pym in issue 27, his emergence as Ant-Man in issue 35. What was Wasp's debut issue in Tales to Astonish?
Wow.
It goes up in numbers, so you can guess.
47.
Oh, close. Go lower. You try.
45.
Oh, so close.
42.
Oh, no, it was 44.
Oh, I knew that.
I thought that one might be a little out there. Okay, so here's a Supergirl question.
Oh, dear.
In the TV show, actors from previous Super shows made cameos in the first episode. Who are these two people? And I also have a hint.
We're talking about the new...
The newest Supergirl series, right. There are two people who have been super people in previous shows. In a 1984 show and a 1993.
Was one of them Dean Cain?
Yes. Who was the other
person?
He was?
I didn't remember seeing
from
him
1984?
In there.
1984 in the
TV
in the
show
of Supergirl.
Oh.
She played Supergirl.
Oh, who was 1984 Supergirl? What was her name?
From the film?
I think it was a TV show, 1984. Wasn't there a TV show?
Well, do you have any name to throw out?
Anything.
No. I don't know.
It's Helen Slater.
Yeah, that was a movie.
Oh, yeah, that was a movie.
Okay. Yeah. Close enough. I don't know these things. I just found it on the internet.
Okay.
A bonus truth or false question with the Supergirl in mind. In the TV show, the latest TV show, they don't mention Superman by name. They only refer to him as cousin, him, or he. Is that true or false?
True.
Yeah, it's true.
Yep. Cool.
They never say Superman.
That's going to be a problem as the story progresses.
Well, that's the entire DC's movie, everything so problem. Superman. They never want to say Superman.
Yeah.
Did they not say Superman in the
Man of Steel?
Man of Steel?
No, right. They avoid it like the plague.
Really?
Yeah. They got close, but they
avoid
it.
There's a lot of discussion about why that is and why they're actually embarrassed.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Well, I mean,
the psychology of DC Comics just escapes me right now.
Say,
and I...
Like, have they come out and said, like, we're embarrassed, so we're never going to say it?
No, they'll never say it.
But yeah.
Well, like, they're never calling the walkers zombies in The Walking Dead.
Right.
So that's a quiz time. Thank you, Nicole, and that's our show.
No!
Tune in every week at perfectboundpodcast.com. You can email us at perfectboundpodcast@gmail.com. You can find everything Nicole Hornaday and I do at thepaneljumper.com. You can also come to the Comic Extension at 319 Northeast 45th Street in beautiful downtown Wallingford, or 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at comicsdungeon.com. Thank you for listening, and we will see you next week.